But I don't normally do that. And I know everybody would raise their hand. But think about how many times have you ever thought, me and my big mouth? Probably some of us think that more often than others, just by nature of our personalities. We even see that in the apostles, don't we? Some of them. Peter probably thought that more often than the others. But I think everybody has had that thought at some time. And the reason why I'm confident in that, in saying that, is not from even my own personal experience with other people, but from what James tells us. James says, we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. Now, I don't think that he means there nobody can reach that kind of perfection, but he's saying you would be a very mature person if you've learned that control. But even if you get to that point, you had to go through a long time of getting there, probably, of growing and maturing. And along the way, we've probably all stumbled in what we say. It just seems to be one of the easiest things to do is to stumble in what we say. And one of the challenges in controlling our tongue is knowing when to speak and when not to speak. The wise man says in Ecclesiastes, for everything there's a season and a time for every matter under heaven, including in verse 7 in that Ecclesiastes 3, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. And I think one of the challenges is sometimes we get those backwards. We don't speak up when we should speak up, and we speak when we probably ought to be quiet. Sometimes we do that wrong. We get that mixed up. In Jeff's class on Wednesday night, talking about the big picture, I think we can all relate to the idea that there's times we should speak up when we remain silent, and that's not good. There's a time that when we need to say something, when something is important, especially when it comes to sharing the gospel with others. But then there are times when it's best, and wisdom and prudence would say the best thing to do is to be quiet. And sometimes we have trouble on that end of it as well. So tonight, that's what I want to focus on, is the times when being quiet is the wisest choice. Proverbs 21:23 says, whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. So knowing when to hold your tongue is an important thing as we learn and grow and mature as Christians. I was thinking about the song we just sang, Lead Me On to Higher Ground. It's like we're constantly climbing and climbing, and so we want the Lord to keep helping us grow and keep getting wiser and keep leading us on closer and closer to the standard of His Son that He left for us. And so part of that is knowing when to speak, because even there were times when Jesus held His tongue and didn't speak. You can probably think of some of those yourself. We'll look at one example later on in the lesson. So tonight we're going to look at six occasions when it's best to be quiet. So first, silence is golden. It's best to be quiet when there's really nothing to say, when you don't have anything to say, and maybe sometimes there's nothing to say, especially in times when someone is suffering a great amount, when there's a huge tragedy. You know, we want to comfort. We want to help. Sometimes we don't know what to say. And sometimes there really isn't anything that can be said. And in some occasions like that, the best thing to do is to not say very much at all, because probably whatever we're going to say isn't going to be helpful if we don't have something worthwhile to say. Job's friends give us a good example and a bad example. Let's turn to Job chapter 2. This little reading is a little too long to fit on the screen. You remember the story in Job, of course, the setup for that. All the suffering that was brought upon him as a severe test that the Lord allowed Satan to do. And this was all confusing to Job, and it was confusing to his wife, and it was confusing to his friends. But they came, at least three of his friends showed up. A fourth one shows up later. But in chapter 2, beginning verse 11, we find out that his friends came. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they each came from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite. They made an appointment together to come show him sympathy and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. And they raised their voices, and they wept, and they tore their clothes, and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights. And no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Job had lost his children. He had lost his health. He had lost all of his possessions. What is there to say to someone in that circumstance? Nothing to say. And his friends were right to come And they were right to share in his grief, and they were right to be quiet. Because when they open their mouth, it all goes downhill from there. After 7 days, they start talking. And they start sharing their ideas about why all this had happened. And in their mind, this was somehow Job's fault. And they decided to tell Job that. And the more they told him, the more he protested that this wasn't true, the more they continued to the point that they actually become part of Job's trial. His own friends who had come to comfort him instead end up adding to his suffering by this long-running debate and argument where they are just intent on convincing Job that this is all some just punishment that he had coming to him. And so instead of what starts out probably very comforting to Job to see his friends and even just to look up and look at them and see in their own faces that they felt his pain would have been very comforting. But then now that they start to talk, they're actually adding to his suffering so that Job says, skip over to chapter 16 and notice what Job says to them after in the middle of this going back and forth with him. Then Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Shall windy words have an end? Or what provokes you that you answer? I could also speak as you do if you were in my place. I could join words together against you and shake my head at you. He says, miserable comforters are you all. Turn back to chapter 13. Look at verse 5. Oh, that you would keep silent and it would be your wisdom. So he says, you got, if this is your idea of comforting me, you're doing a terrible job at it. This is awful. You're not helping me. You're making things worse by what you're saying. Of course, they didn't relent. It took a tornado, basically, God showing up to make them all be quiet and put them all in their place. So that's one example. Sometimes the best thing we can do, if we don't have anything helpful to say, is to just say, I'm sorry. And there may not be anything else we can say in some circumstances than that. And the things that come to our mind to say maybe would be better left unsaid. So we have to really use some wisdom in some circumstances. It may be best just to share in someone's suffering without sharing our own thoughts, unless we can think of something from God's Word to offer comfort in that case. And then there's other times when we should keep quiet. Perhaps the best advice is, when in doubt, keep silent. But some of us struggle with that. I mentioned Peter earlier. Some people feel like they just need to be talking. And some people feel like if there's silence, they need to feel that silence because it feels kind of awkward. Like, well, somebody needs to say something, so I'm going to just talk here because nobody else is talking. It's kind of quiet. And sometimes that gets us in trouble. You know, Peter seemed like he always was quick to speak up. You remember at the Transfiguration, Jesus had invited Peter and James and John to come up with him, and he was transfigured in their presence. And there appeared to them Elijah and Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And Peter speaks up. Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. For he did not know what to say, for they were terrified. And a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud, this is my beloved son, listen to him. And when he looked up, Elijah and Moses were gone, it was just Jesus. Well, Peter didn't really get in any trouble here, but it seems clear that what he said wasn't the right thing to say in that circumstance. Maybe the better choice would have been just to be quiet and listen. Jesus is having a conversation with Elijah and Moses, and you don't need to speak up at this point. This is not there's no need for you to make some suggestion about what needs to be done. Jesus brought you here. You sit and listen. But Peter, because it says he didn't know what to say, and he was terrified, and so some people, when they're terrified and don't know what to say, they be quiet. That's the wise thing to do. Some people, when they're terrified and don't know what to say, they just start talking, and that's sometimes not their best thing to do, and that seems what Peter did here. The better thing would have been to listen. Someone has said that the Lord has given us two ears and one mouth, and that's an indication that we should listen twice as much as we talk. I don't know if that's the reason why we have two ears and one mouth, but it is good wisdom. Proverbs 17:28 says, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. And the modern twist on that is, better to be quiet and thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And so that's good wisdom, that's good advice, that if we don't have something smart saying we're not sure what to say, there's times when it's best just to be quiet and keep your ears open and pay attention to what's going on. So that's one example of a time when silence is golden. Another is maybe you know something and you're considering sharing this or saying this thing, but if all it's going to do is do harm, then what's the point in saying it? If sharing this information, if you know something and you're thinking about talking about it, but it's not going to help anything, maybe that's a time to just keep that to yourself. For instance, let's say you know something about somebody. As an example, let's say that you have a new friend and an old friend, and your new friend meets the old friend, and they tell you, "Oh, I met somebody that you know, and he's great, or she's really nice, and we're working together. She says she knows you, and you know all about this person." Now, you could say, "Yeah, well, if you knew what they've been through, if you know where they've come from, maybe they've kind of turned their life around. Maybe they had a real rough past. Maybe they struggled with something for a long time. Maybe you know all kinds of things about your old friend because you've been there for a long time. Does your new friend need to know any of that? Is it going to help them in some way?" Now, it might be that there's some reason they need to know, but that's where you got to use some wisdom. Are you just sharing this because you know it and it's really interesting? Or is there some good that's going to come out of talking about it? Because maybe, and if you want to figure out the best thing, put yourself in their shoes. If you were that person and you've made some change and you have something shameful that you're not proud of, but you don't do it anymore and now you meet somebody, would you want people to follow along that knew you from back when and tell everybody that meets you about everything they know about you? Obviously not. You would hope to leave that behind, probably, unless there's some reason you want to bring it up. And yet sometimes just because people know something, it's like that word association. You say this person's name, that's what pops in their mind, and before, without even thinking, they're talking about it. And maybe you've been guilty of that as well. Proverbs 11:12 says, "Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent." So just ask yourself, is this thing that I'm thinking about telling, is it going to help anybody at all, or is it just going to tear this person down and do harm? And in that case, just be quiet. No, you don't have to say everything you know about everyone in every situation. Another example of this would be if what you're going to say is just criticizing and complaining without being helpful, without being constructive criticism. So if you're just pointing out flaws and just tearing down and just complaining and showing why there's something wrong, if you're doing that to help someone grow or to be positive in some way, like here's something we need to work on and I know how to help you, and then there might be a reason for that. But if you're just sitting back taking pot shots at something or pointing out the flaws you see, is that helping anybody? Is that adding to, or is that just tearing down? Ephesians 4:29 said, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear." If we only say those things, it's going to help us. That's a challenge. Especially when you see something and you want to point it out, or you can easily, it's easy to be a critic. We all can see the flaws in other people. We all can see the mistakes and the errors and the things that aren't good about something. The question to ask yourself is, before I start talking about all that, is it going to be helpful, or am I just tearing down? And if so, hey, just keep it to yourself. You're not really helping anybody by sharing your critique of that. A third example of when it's best to be silent is when someone has shared something with you in confidence, when they have shared with you something private. Proverbs 11:13 says, "Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered." Think about your group of friends. Probably we all have a friend that you know, you can talk to this person about something personal and it won't go anywhere else. We have that friend probably, right? And we probably all have another friend that you know, if you tell this person something, within a short period of time, it's going to be public knowledge. So we kind of got those two friends in mind. Now the question is, what kind of friend am I? Which one of those are you for your group of friends? Are you the person that people can talk to and share some struggle and ask for your advice or help with some problem, and they know that they don't even have to worry when they walk away that somebody else is going to find out about it because they just trust that you're this kind of trustworthy person? Or then later, are we tempted because when that person's name comes up, we know something and we almost can't hold it in? That's something to work on. That's not being trustworthy in spirit. That's not being that kind of person. Some promises don't need to be kept. Some secrets don't need to be kept. And I wanted to add that as well. Sometimes somebody shares something, and for that person's own good or for someone else's own good, you need to speak up. I think children probably struggle with that maybe more than other people do. There are things that need to be shared for someone's best interest, and out of love for that person or someone else, we have to say what we know. And if that's the case, here would be a test for that. You should be able to tell that person, I know you didn't want this to come out, but for your own good, I have to say something, you know. And in that case, we're not kind of, you know, going behind their back, but you should be able to. And, you know, there's even mandatory things that have to be spoken of and reported when you know about those things, if love demands it. And for that reason alone, if somebody ever comes to you and says, if I tell you something, will you promise not to tell anybody? That's probably not a good thing to agree to. I don't see any point in agreeing to that. In fact, up front, it'd be better to say, well, you know, I don't know if I can agree to that. Something to think about. But anyway, if it's not something that love demands, concern for that person and their safety or their soul demands that you to talk about, we should be someone that people can trust to come to with their problems and difficulties. Silence is also golden if you've only heard one side of a matter. If you haven't heard from both sides in a dispute, Proverbs 18:17 says, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. We've all seen this, and we've all probably been on the receiving end and of both sides of this, where you've talked to one person and man, that they from what they're saying, this other person is in the wrong. But before you go say something, maybe you ought to hear what that other person has to say. And it's not always a case where somebody's being deceptive. It's just that I perceive myself to be right just about all the time. And that's just kind of a human trait, right? And you perceive yourself to be right. So that somewhere in the middle could be a misunderstanding. It could just be that we heard the same conversation two different ways, or I took it differently than you meant it. We should give each other the benefit of the doubt. And if it's a good thing to be a peacemaker. In fact, Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. They are called sons of God. But if I'm going to be a peacemaker, I'm going to have to try to understand the whole truth about something before I get involved, if I'm going to get involved, if I'm going to give advice, or if I'm going to speak up and tell what I know about something. It's good to hear people out. Even this morning we talked about, in the case of someone wanted for murder, you know, everybody gets their chance to explain their side of what happened so we can know the truth about it. Things aren't always what they appear. It's also good to be quiet if the argument or the quarrel or whatever the discussion is just pointless. Then maybe it's best to not even get involved. To just look at that and say, you know what, I'm thinking now about social media and, you know, those kind of discussions, Facebook, those kinds of things. But it could be in a lot of contexts that there's a debate going on. And the best choice is to leave it alone. There's an interesting proverb about this. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So should you answer a fool according to his folly? Yes and no, right? And that's what it says. And so one says do it, and the other says don't. In fact, I read that some rabbis really wrestled with that, and they wondered, why would an inspired book tell you both sides? Well, it's because sometimes wisdom, you know, depending on how you look at it, looks different ways. What you should never do is be drawn down to the fool's level, where now you are participating in his folly. But sometimes when the opportunity presents itself, you might be able to show him the folly of his reasoning. It just really takes a lot of wisdom to know how to deal with that. When someone is, you know, asking questions or making comments or starting a fuss, are they really truly trying to find the truth, or are they just enjoying stirring things up? A New Testament passage says, avoid foolish controversies, genealogies, dissensions, quarrels about the law that are unprofitable and worthless. Now that takes wisdom as well. How do you know if somebody is sincere? How do you know if they are just trying to, stir things up? You know, there's people in the internet age on websites that are called trolls. I know younger people have heard of trolls. Old people know trolls live by bridges, right? So it's not that kind of troll. Trolls live on the internet as well. But what trolls on the internet do is they get a kick out of getting everybody worked up. And so in any kind of discussion, in comments on a YouTube video or anywhere, they make the most outlandish, offensive, controversial statement possible for the sole purpose of getting a lot of attention. They probably don't even believe what they're saying. But they just say the most outlandish things because like clockwork, hordes of people will come and respond to what they're saying, which gives them exactly what they're looking for. And you want to just say to everybody, they say, in fact, don't feed the trolls. But what you want, if you would quit responding, these people wouldn't get what they're looking for. But the only thing they're trying to do is get you worked up. So by responding and getting angry, you're giving them exactly what they want. And for that very reason, sometimes those comments bubble to the top, which is frustrating when you ever try to read comments, when the top four or five comments are these, just these provocative things, which just becomes pointless. But they enjoy that because that's what they're after. Don't feed the trolls. Well, this is Paul saying, don't feed the trolls. That's what he's saying. There's people who their whole purpose is just to, they enjoy the excitement of getting people worked up. Don't give them what they're looking for. If they're wanting to start some, pointless debate, pointless discussion, drag you into some, topic that doesn't make any difference at all, it's best to leave that alone and not get drawn into some kind of debate that isn't going to be helpful. Now, that's going to take wisdom. Jesus gives us a good example. Look at Matthew chapter 21. We'll look at an example from Jesus that's a little bit too long to fit on the screen. Matthew 21. And this also gives us some insight into how to gauge when to engage and when not to, and how much to know when, how serious somebody is. Matthew 21 verse 23, beginning. When he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people, came up to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority?" And Jesus answered them, "I will also ask you one question. If you tell me the answer, then I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, where did it come from? From heaven or from man?" They discussed among themselves, saying, "Well, if we say from heaven, he'll say to us, why then did you not believe? If we say from man, we're afraid of the crowd, for they all told John he was a prophet." For they hold that John was a prophet. So they said, "Jesus, we don't know." And Jesus answered them, "Well, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things." They were setting a trap. They weren't really trying to know. In fact, if they had any question about it, the miracles he was doing were obvious proof that he was from God and that was the authority that he had. He didn't need to answer the question. It was apparent. They were just trying to bait him into a kind of a no-win, gotcha kind of a question. Now, how does that apply to you and me? So somebody comes up and they have a question. This happens all the time. "So you think you're one of the only people going to heaven, right? Or one of these things. Now, are they sincerely interested in discussing the scriptures, or are they just trying to bait you into a debate or something, right? Here's a good way to know. Would you be interested in studying what the Bible says about that? No. Well, then they're probably not. They may not say no like that, but we can try to feel out, is this someone who's sincerely seeking? Are they interested in, are they just trying to see where we're coming from? Is what they've heard about us true? And that takes a lot of wisdom, and it's not an easy question to answer. In fact, what I like to say is I probably believe the same thing about that you do. Don't you agree that if we believe in the Lord and do what he says, that those are the people who will be saved? And usually, yeah, well, then we agree. Now we need to study what does the Lord say about what we should do. But if someone is sincere, then they might be interested in having a genuine conversation about that. And there's ways to, like Jesus did, maybe put some feelers out to see, are they really sincere, or are they just wanting to bash on you or draw you into some kind of a no-win situation. And we don't have to engage. We can be like Jesus and say, that's not a debate that I'm interested in having. I'm not willing to go on and on in some kind of a discussion about that. And lastly, number six, silence is golden when it is a matter of opinion. Look at Romans chapter 14. There's some interesting wisdom in Romans 14 that I think sometimes is missing. It's tough, and this is another thing where it takes all these things take a lot of wisdom to know how to apply, in a given situation, which principle to apply. It takes a lot of wisdom. It's not easy, and that's why I think we all stumble in many ways, and if any man doesn't stumble in what he says, he's mature, because it's hard to know when to speak up. But Paul gives us some instructions here. He says in verse 1, "As for one who is weak in the faith, welcome him, but not to quarrel over opinions." The point of what follows is to prevent the Christians in Rome from having these debates over things they don't need to be arguing about. doubtful disputations, I think is the King James. So how are they to do that? Well, if you hold a personal conviction about you should only eat vegetables, or if you don't hold that, each one of you, notice what he says in verse 5, one person esteems one day better than another, while another esteems all days alike. What's the instruction? Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. So you study this, you come to some conviction and you live according to what your conscience tells you on this matter of opinion. Now, not everybody's going to have the same opinions. What do we do about that? Maybe, in some cases, you keep that to yourself. If it's a question that might cause your brother to stumble, look down at the end of this and notice what Paul says in verses 20 to 23. Do not, for the sake of food, destroy the work of God. Everything is indeed clean, but it is wrong for anyone to make another stumble by what he eats. It is good not to eat meat or drink wine or do anything that causes your brother to stumble. The faith that you have, keep between yourself and God. Blessed is the one who has no reason to pass judgment on himself for what he approves. But whoever has doubts is condemned if he eats, because the eating is not from faith. For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin. So let's think about the case of the meats. Here's a man whose conscience tells him he can't eat these things, these meats. Maybe they were sacrificed to idols. I don't even know. Paul doesn't tell us. But he doesn't feel like in good conscience he can eat meat. Here's a man who knows you can eat meat. There's nothing wrong with it. That's been the law since Noah got off the ark. Remember we saw this morning that you can eat meat. So what can he do toward his brother? He can just beat him over the head with this. That's silly. That's silly. This is good. If you've never had bacon, it's the best stuff. What's wrong with you? You don't know what you're missing. And just, you know, try to twist his arm and say, just try it. There's nothing wrong with it. Look, the Bible doesn't say anything. He can do that and cause the man to sin against his conscience by giving in and eating and feeling like he shouldn't. And then he's got doubts about it. And now you have sinned, even though you're right. Blessed is the man who doesn't condemn himself and what he approves. Better to have that opinion and keep it between yourself and God than to cause your brother to stumble by violating his conscience. You just leave him alone. If he's happy to go on through his life eating only vegetables, and he feels like that's what he should do, then what's wrong with that? Let him eat his vegetables. You eat your meat, and don't have some kind of pointless, verse number one, doubtful disputation or argument about these opinions. In those kind of matters of personal scruples and opinions, it's okay for you to have your view and somebody else to have a different view, and both of you to just, you know, live within what your conscience requires. And that requires, again, some wisdom. And but there's an example of something where maybe it's best to just keep your opinion to yourself. Now, this doesn't mean we kind of hide the truth or we're fake or phony or anything. If somebody asks us, and I think if you were to ask Paul, he would say, in fact, he does say everywhere, everything is indeed clean. He lays out the truth right here of where his position is on this. The truth is, but he's not going to take that. And he even says that he would give up his right to enjoy that freedom if it would keep his brother from stumbling. So that's number one that we need to be careful about, is not causing our brother to stumble is more important than demanding that we are right and that everybody knows we're right and that they have to know that they're wrong about this. And if it's a matter of opinion or if it's a matter of someone's scruples, maybe best to just remain quiet. Silence is golden. These six occasions, when there's really nothing to say, maybe better just not to say much at all. When whatever you're thinking about saying is only going to tear somebody down, don't say it. Just as hard as it is, keep it to yourself. When what you were told is private and was not intended to be told and there's no pressing need out of love to share it, then maybe you should keep that to yourself and be trustworthy. When you haven't heard both sides of something, keep that in mind before you talk about it. When whatever this debate or discussion is just pointless, just skip on over that and go on about some other business and don't get drawn into those things, because that's not going to be helpful. And in this cases of where it's matters of opinion and scruples, better to not talk if speaking could possibly cause someone to stumble. There's many others, I'm sure. These are six that I've found in looking through this topic this week. There are times when we do need to speak up. There are times when duty requires us to speak up. That's a whole other lesson, but I want to give you one example just for our invitation tonight, and it's in Psalm 32. Turn over to Psalm 32. This will be our last passage. And then the lesson will be yours. Psalm 32. This is a time when David tried to keep quiet, and it was the wrong thing to do. Notice what he says, beginning in verse 3. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you. I did not cover my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. I don't know what that occasion was necessarily, but David says there was a time when he was feeling the guilt, the God's hand pressing down on him, the burden of carrying that around. He tried to be quiet about it, and he just felt like it was rotting his bones away until he finally confessed his fault. Perhaps tonight someone has something pressing on you.